Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago. Danny Burke, producing engineering, contributing today. And you can dial us up, can tap the line. Schilling Bridge, Cork and Tap House lets you do that. 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. We're on Twitter for you, at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio. And can email us, Chris, at HailVarsity.com. Busy show loaded up. Plenty of Nebraska football thoughts in reference to some nuggets from Scott Frost to the Journal Star. We'll talk about that. We'll spend some time on recruiting. We'll get into this look Nebraska's offense is moving towards and how that could work in the Big Ten. A golf segment is a half hour away. One of my favorite people, Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf. Shuey will be in. We'll talk plenty of, Tiger, and we'll talk plenty of Husker golf with Shuey. Brandon Vogel is 15 minutes away to enlighten us with Nebraska and Hail Varsity. So excited to talk to Vogues. And then in hour two, excited, capital E on this, Ted Johnson. That name may ring a bell with you if you're a Nebraska, Colorado fan. You're not a Colorado fan, I get that. But that series, and Ted Johnson was an incredible linebacker for the Colorado Buffaloes and a big-time linebacker for the New England Patriots. He played in four Super Bowls. He won three. He works with CBS Radio down in Houston. And Ted has his own show. Had a chance to get caught up with Ted Johnson. And he lived it, bro. He lived it with Parcells to Belichick. 10 years in the league. We'll get caught up with Ted Johnson in 1 hour. 466-377-6800-825-5865. Not lying to you here, Danny. You said, I'm kind of just going back and forth with you here. What are you watching? What are you checking out? And you said the Brady documentary on Facebook.
That's right.
Tom versus Time. So I started it here a little bit ago. And I don't know why I didn't jump in right away. I'm not this anti-Brady guy. I respect the heck out of him. I do. And I know people who've spent time with him, be it Lars Anderson or Russ Hochstein, who are really straight shooters. And I don't know. I'm just not a New England fan. I don't hate either. I'm just kind of indifferent. And I don't know if that's more of the minority or the majority with that. If you're either one way or the other, you can you kind of be gray with New England? So we'll get into that. And the thing that I got 5 minutes of episode one before you said, you know, to put your phone down and start talking about the preparation that goes into it. And Brady was going into some notes on last year's Super Bowl. And to kind of parallel this to Nebraska football, you know, I'm interested to have a discussion here with where Nebraska is going from a quarterback standpoint. And when you think of the teams and you think of the winners in college football and you think of the Jameis Winstons, you think of what Bama has been able to do for the most part without a great quarterback. And now they're into that's the most important position on the field. So we're going to get a first string and a second team great quarterback. And then Clemson's been really good. Baker Mayfield was tremendous. Ohio State's crushing people. Penn State's phenomenal. And it's all because of the quarterback play. And you look at the Big Ten right now, and specifically the West, Hornibrook went 13-1, won in the Orange Bowl against Miami on the road. Northwestern, Clayton Thorson's been at Northwestern for 650 years. bless his heart, with his knee injury. Brohm's a savant offensively, and Purdue, one thing they can do is get quarterbacks to go to Purdue, historically speaking. Illinois, don't care, don't know. But, you know, where's Nebraska fit into this? And Nebraska has a really talented quarterback now as their head coach and their play caller and the guy that's going to get Nebraska's offense cranking again in Big Ten play. It's been a long time. Defense also needs to be at a high level. But Frost was asked this by the Journal Star when it comes to, okay, where do the quarterbacks on campus right now, where do they need to excel? What do they need to be great in? And the first thing that Frost said in their interview was the number one trait you have to process is information quickly. That's a quote. And it just got my mind wandering here. When's the last time Nebraska's had a quarterback be able to process info quickly? They've had quarterbacks do that. But when I'm talking big game, big moment, to make the play and get the touchdown, get the first down, too many times in big games, it's been bogged down. You've not been able to make the play because you haven't had time. It's hard to process information when you're getting hit right after you back away from center. So I want to look at the quarterbacks that are your candidates right now for spring football. You've got Martinez, you've got Jebbia, you've got O'Brien. And as good as Martinez sounds, as good as Martinez has looked on film, as big a priority as he has been with that first early signing period, the all-night flight to get him here, he could be another Mariota. He could be phenomenal. Noah Vedral, very nice. Great get for Nebraska. We'll get to him in a minute from this interview. I look at what you have on campus now, and guys, listen, O'Brien's had some live game reps. And he ran a bit of a zone read in high school. And then you have Jebbia. And, man, you know what? If I have to place early bets and be right or be wrong, when Scott Frost tells me the number one trait they have is to process information quickly, that screams Tristan Jebbia to me. What's my background? What's my thought? Why does his name jump into my mind? Just because of what we've heard about him, but also what you saw about him in the spring game. Think back to about a year ago. You know, pre-Frost. What did you take away with from that spring game? Well, Tanner can sling it. Great throw to Spielman. Yeah. But you also saw a kid that should have been getting ready for prom who enrolled early, come in, really wasn't phased. Again, it wasn't the 85 Bears he was facing. And he just handled himself. And that's the name I'm going to be looking for if the number one trait. Now, there's other things that go into it. We'll get to that. But when it comes to processing information and getting this offense to excel speed-wise and just crush defenses, man, I think Jebby is a guy you really got to watch. You really got to watch. There's some compliments handed out in this Journal Star interview on Jebbia, on O'Brien. We'll get to the phones here. We'll take your thoughts here. But you know what? When you look at quarterback play and it being a difference maker and the reason you win versus losing, it comes down to preparation and that preparation being applied to what you do on field. And when the bullets are flying, be able to pull the trigger. And Jebbia is a guy that all he does, it sounds like, is process, process, process. And then his preparation leads to really good training. And then the training leads to good performance. I'm excited. I mean, that's the thing that I think a lot of Nebraska fans are really high on right now, not just Scott Frost, but what he can do with the quarterbacks. And you're always looking for more quarterbacks. It's going to be a crowded quarterback room. They're trying to get Tago to verbally commit here as a second quarterback along with Martinez. But have options. You have Noah Vedral that's going to be kind of a coach on the field, as Frost put it in this interview, to get the rest of the offense and the quarterback room moving in the right direction, kind of teach them. And then you got a guy that's supposed to be a whiz kid in Jebbia. I mean, remember his recruitment? Remember him coming in? Remember how he looked on film? There's aspects and question marks for sure. But if we're talking what's the number one thing Frost says is important, is that ability to process information. Jebbia is a guy that might be ahead of everyone that's in that quarterback room based on what he's done already since he's been here. That's thrown out, new regime, new sheriff, I get it, but his study habits and his preparation. Brian's been on hold. Brian, thanks for hanging on. Brian, go ahead. Welcome into Hail Varsity.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm all with you on Jebbia. I really think that he's going to be the starter come September.
Okay.
Besides that, there's something that's been really irking me about college football and this star rating system. Okay, mm-hmm. you may have a five star. You'll say, oh, we recruited a five star quarterback out of Pig's Knuckle, Arkansas, but we also got a one star out of Lawrence Nelson in Nebraska. I've seen them on the film and they look pretty good. Well, and my thing is, you're doing it against high school talent. Okay, that there's a huge difference. There's a huge jump from high school to college. How do you really know he's a quote-unquote five-star?
Well, and listen, I've been as much into the star pump that goes on. I mean, we do recruiting. We talk to it. I think we're pretty measured about it. But it's a big deal if you do get a four or a five-star guy. There's a reason Julio Jones is a five-star, okay?
Yeah.
To give, like, the one extreme example. And then there's the reason that Sue's a four and a half or a five-star, right? I mean, guys that play, and I think the rating system is, and I got, you know, Vogues might know this, and Greg Smith would know this for sure better than me, but I think based on competition and also camps you attended and then the grading, granted not with pads on, and that's a huge difference maker, I get it. But
yeah. When
you look at the fact that, okay, this is the competition the kid's playing, the kid's from Calabasas, he's in the highest level of football in the state of Nebraska, or he's in the highest level of football in Florida, or he's in the highest level of football in Texas or California, that's where I think you kind of make your projections against like competition, like talent. That's what part of that formula goes into. And a lot of it could be, you're right, man, it could be hype. And there's no reason other than location that a kid from Pig's Knuckle versus Nebraska, the kid at Nebraska could earn it, could work better, could be a better college player than high school, even though he came from a smaller system. I totally agree with you. It's not a foregone conclusion, obviously.
But, you know, I would really love to see that one-star beat out everybody.
Well, and they will. They do. They have. I mean, look at the walk-ons that got scholarships at Nebraska. I mean, you look at
Brooke Barringer.
Yeah, Brooke. You look at Spencer Long. You look at Makavica. You look at Hochstein. I mean, well, Hochstein was a scholarship guy, but you get my point.
Yeah.
Look at all the guys from the state of Nebraska that won jobs on the offensive and defensive line. In the trenches where you win ball games.
On a side note, I just hope that Scott Frost brings back the black shirt tradition. I really, really, really want to see opponents cry. I'm tired.
I don't think you're alone. Brian, I don't think you're alone. Appreciate your call, man. Appreciate you listening. Thanks so much. Yeah, listen, I Frost gets the black shirt tradition. He was, you know, going live against them 2 to 3 days a week. Would be my guess. Good stuff from Brian. He just opened a can of whoop on me there with the star system. And, you know, it's okay. Listen, the star rating system, it's all about what you do when you come in. Okay, here's your projection. Here's what we think you can do. Here's your speed, size, talent. Here's how you did against pretty good competition. How do you translate to college? You check the ego at the door. You work just as hard or harder than the next guy. That's what it comes down to. And Nebraska is going to try and get that out. Well, we'll spend some more time talking quarterbacks with Brandon Vogel that's on this roster. When it comes to the processing of the quarterback spot, Jebbia, O'Brien, Martinez, you have Martinez that is kind of a natural and a kid that Frost really liked, the kid he liked best out of all in this 2018 class. He likes athleticism, but that processing is huge. And then if you can process it, you can go quick. And if you can go quick, the defense can't sub. And if the defense can't sub, they can't communicate. They get tired. It's a domino effect that is so advantageous with the offense. And it just gashes you. And you get those 90 plays ran on a defense, and that's a difference maker. It's an absolute difference maker, especially in the fourth quarter. And you know what happens in the fourth quarter. You love seeing it for years with Nebraska football. Maybe a different way, but the same cumulative effect of wearing down and tapping out. Great to be with you on Wednesday. Three-time Super Bowl champ Ted Johnson of the New England Patriots. Less than an hour away. Brandon Vogel up next on Hail Varsity Radio.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Great to be with you on Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. We'll talk some Tiger Woods, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment coming up. Mike Shewhart, Shuey. We'll be with us. Welcome in Brandon Vogel of HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Vogues, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am good. I'm going to pick your brain at some point in this segment about Vogues' famous chili because, well, to be frank, if I let Mama Bear do the chili, it's not spicy. There's, much like a pitch count, a meat count. How much hamburger are we using? Oh, we can't use any pork. I just need to step my chili game up, okay? So I'm gonna lean on you because you're pretty good at it. I'm going to talk to Kranak about it Saturday because he is a chili champion as well. But let's talk quarterbacks and spend some time to open up the show regarding the Journal Star interview with Frost and the trait of processing information. And listen, an early lean, and we're 1,000 miles out here. Spring's not even here. It's still cold and snowy. But with the quarterbacks in the room right now, let's spend a minute here on Jebbia the rest of the room here. And do you feel confident and comfortable with him based on his reputation and based on what you saw in spring as to be a guy that has shown the ability out of what choices you have to process info pretty quickly, although he's not been in a live game? I get it.
Yeah, I do. He certainly, from what we've heard and been able to see a little bit, he seems to have that gym rat gene among the group that's currently there. And, you know, we don't really know anything about Adrian Martinez in that regard.
Right.
So it's possible that he does too. But of the known entities, I think that's Jebbia's key advantage. Is he's just a guy who takes to that sort of thing. You know, when you throw a new offense at him, you almost get the sense that he gets excited because he gets to go into the study room and really go to work and do his thing there. And you look at, you know, his completion numbers in high school, which were above 70%. Now, granted, it's a different level, but you don't get there just via your own ability or your offense, but it's sort of the combination of the two. So I think in that regard, he certainly fits pretty well, and I think he'll find a pretty comfortable home with this staff. You start to look at some of the other players, and there's a lot that's unknown there. How does Patrick O'Brien take to that specific challenge? And then with the new guys, you know, they have the advantage of, well, this is the only system they're going to know in college. Yeah, it'll be an interesting spring, but I kind of go into it thinking that Jebbia might have a little bit of an edge there.
I think he might have an edge. I like O'Brien. just his frame, and I know he's not a burner, but he's more than capable when it comes to groundwork on some of the zone read stuff. And then, I mean, Scott only had one favorite, right, for 2018, and it was Adrian. So not bad choices. How do you think Frost will manage that room? And then, you know, Vedral's sitting out this year, but he's going to do what he can to help the room and, oh, by the way, also get ready to compete when he's eligible.
Well, you know, he mentioned also when talking about quarterbacks there, the ability to do, I guess, functional groundwork. Mm-hmm. So it's not that you've got to come in and be this sort of accomplished guy whose best trait or second best trait perhaps is the ability to run the ball, but if you can handle everything else, if you can get through the reads and make decisions quickly, and those decisions lead you to, well, I need to run the ball. You need to be able to do that too. So that's sort of that second level. When I look at this race and try to handicap, okay, what traits are going to win here? I think I had that decision making part of it at the top. So, and you know, I think all of the guys that we assume are going to be in the race, the top three, I guess, mm-hmm. that we have, you know, and we'll see how Andrew Bunch factors in there, are capable enough on the ground to hurt you if that's the thing that's open. It's just a matter of determining those right times. You know, you go back and you watch Mackenzie Milton and what he was able to do at UCF, and that's a pretty unique skill set. You know, he wasn't a highly touted guy coming out of high school, but you go back and watch the 2017 film, and he was making some absolutely unbelievable plays, both with his feet and with his arm.
He just killed defenses, man. I mean, he was so good extending and then also running, and he didn't get smoked. That's the key part here. That's the fear you have, isn't it? Is your 8 to 12 carries? Oops, somebody tees off on you. Let's go to that functional groundwork tag for a second. It'll vary, obviously, but based on what you've studied with Central Florida and what you see with Nebraska, what's functional groundwork mean to you? Is it 8? Is it 12? Is it 20? Is it 2? I mean, do you have a grasp on or a projection when it comes to the groundwork the quarterbacks will be asked to carry?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends a little bit on opponent. So a lot of it is determined on the reads that are designed for you, and then if you get through those and what you thought might be open isn't there, then it's probably time to start thinking about running. So you got to process that information quickly. Of course, you know, we're talking about just a couple of seconds. But it also, I think, kind of why you saw UCF's offense fully flower this year is that Milton was able to process that information that quickly, but also he had the legs to really hurt you. So you couldn't say, well, if we're presented with these conflicts, which every offense is trying to put defenders in conflict, we're going to choose to just let the quarterback run it. So you do have to have a certain level there. So a lot of that would be dependent on, I guess, it comes down to play calling and comes down to the defensive personnel. But I don't think you'll see the rushing totals that you saw at UCF this past year, because based on what we've seen so far, I don't know if they have anybody who's quite as accomplished and can hurt an opposing defense, I guess, as much as Milton did in 2017.
Yeah, that's a nice goal to aim for, but Milton's pretty special, and we'll see if one of Nebraska's quarterbacks can develop into something close to Milton. Brandon Vogel's with us, Hail Varsity Magazine, hailvarsity.com, at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. What do you think Nebraska is getting with Frost here as a play caller? I mean, I know the office has new shelves with Coach of the Year awards on them, but just in honesty, when you look at him versus the rest of the Big Ten, you don't got to go team by team or head coach or OC by OC, but Nebraska's jump, and this isn't a Langsdorf shot either, but what do you think Nebraska has with Frost? I mean, what type of potential is there?
Well, the all of the past stuff indicates that it's pretty high in terms of the ceiling for Frost as a play caller. You know, you want to be cautious and not get too far ahead of yourself with any of these things. But, you know, there's a really interesting story by Ian Boyd at footballstudyhall.com, kind of looking at how this offense matches up against the Big Ten West. And one of the things I really took from that is he mentioned all of the advantages that Nebraska had or created for itself under Tom Osborne, you know, among those sort of Prop 48 for a while, which was one that it had. That was a slight edge. Strength and conditioning was one that it created by being there first. But the one that people probably don't talk about as much was Tom Osborne's ability as a play caller, which if you get into the coaching ranks and start to talk to people who have, you know, made football their life, they'll tell you that there were few people who called as good a game as Tom Osborne. I don't know. Well, Frost isn't there yet, but it certainly seems, based on what we've seen so far, that he has the potential to get there. So that's kind of one of those hidden advantages, I think, where, you know, it's just a guy who kind of sees the chessboard a couple steps ahead and really knows how to stress teams. And when you get players who can execute that, you see the result. It took him 2 years to kind of get there at UCF. We'll see how long that particular journey is at Nebraska.
That's another segment, another show, but we'll get to that this spring. Brandon Vogel with us. Vogues, as we end, your thoughts on Bill Moose's comments regarding Frost and Zach Duvall and the strength and conditioning situation with the hospitalization with no punishment coming.
Yeah, I think everyone has handled it as well as they could. I mean, look, it's a bad situation. It's bad for the players. It happened to. It's bad for the coaches. They obviously don't want this thing to happen and would have done, you know, the things that they could to prevent it. So it's just one of those things where you're kind of like, wow, really wish that it hadn't gone down that specific way. You know, one of the benefits of kind of being in a program like this, you know, a sort of symptom or ailment of this sort, you catch it right away. So while it can be dangerous, and I'm not trying to minimize it at all, you know, this is the place for that sort of thing to happen. And you just kind of hope that everyone can learn from it, you know, and there's so much that we still don't know and can't know, you know, due to privacy laws, which is totally fine. But, you know, you have to look at things like, you know, did one of those players go to bed that night a little bit more dehydrated than they normally would have been? You know, all those things can kind of factor in. So the fact that it was only two doesn't make it seem like it's something systemic going on with how things are going, which I think is a little bit different than some of the previous cases that we've seen where this has happened.
So you're saying, did they go to bed the time Schmidt goes to bed after Mardi Gras at 3 a.m.?
No, I'm not saying that, but, you know, it just happened to be.
Well, it's a fair question. Where... What's your hydration level like?
It is a fair question. But I mean, if it just happened to be a day where, like, yeah, you know, normally I drink six of these containers of water and I drink four.
Right.
And, you know, you'd taken a couple of days off on conditioning, you know, all things like that can all factor into this from what I understand, but I'm far from a medical professional.
Well, you can play one on the radio. Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Brandon L. Vogel. Vogues, we'll get caught up Friday for the forecast. Love having you on. Thanks for the time, dude.
Thank you.
There he is, Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity Radio. I see him. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf coming up.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
I actually called Tiger, and I asked how his day went. He said he hit three fairways, but his short game was solid. And, you know, I asked him about momentum, you know, because, you know, in every sport there's momentum. how to control that, and his piece of advice was not to make a bogey.
Good advice by Tiger Woods, Jason Day, Wynn and Farmers, and welcome into the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf, Husker Golf. Shuey, good to be with you, man. How are you?
Man, I'm doing good. Glad to be in the studio.
It's good to see you.
I know it.
It was fun on the phone, but it's better in person.
Always better in person.
It'll be great in person for your St. Patrick's Day extravaganza at Wilderness Ridge. Let me tell you about that. You're invited to join at Wilderness Ridge March 14th, 6:30 for Ales and Stouts Beer Dinner. Let me say that again. March 14th, 6:30, Ales and Stouts Beer Dinner. Enjoy made-from-scratch dishes crafted by Eric Straley, tremendous chef. And I tell you what, it's pretty awesome with Wilderness Ridge. Visit the website, wildernessridgegolf.com, or reserve your spot today for the Ales and Stouts Beer Dinner, 402-434-5118. That's a heads up ahead of time here. St. Paddy's Day around the corner, and be there at Wilderness Ridge for it. That sounds tremendous. Ales and Stouts.
That always sounds tremendous.
Beer dinner.
Yeah. Can't go wrong with that.
I like it. Shuey, let's start with some Husker golf. Get caught up. You guys head to Puerto Rico in a week.
Yep.
And we'll get to Tiger and how you thought he did here in a bit, but tell me how Husker golf's going and what's been up this week as you guys prep for that trip.
Yeah, it's been good. Getting excited and getting ready to go. First tournament of the year in a week. So just doing a lot of training, doing a lot of skills work. So we have a facility on campus that we do a little work in that TrackMan, if some people are familiar with TrackMan. So it's basically gives you a lot of information. So as you hit a shot, it tells you a lot what your shot is doing, you know. So we doing some skill testing in there to get our players kind of dialed in and comfortable with and understanding what they do, you know, and what they do well, what they don't do well, how to improve on some of the things that they need, but more of just fine-tuning what it is that they need to do. So when we go out and play and start competing, and they're comfortable with what it is they need to do, so gives them a better chance to be able to do it. So it's been good. It's been really cool.
Mike Shewhart's with us, Wilderness Ridge Golf, Husker Golf, and wildernessridgegolf.com is where you can log on. You know, it's been teasing us temperature-wise and weather-wise.
Yeah.
And you're going to get that dirty 3 to 4 day 70s streak in February, as you always do. And then it'll turn back into old man winter.
Oh, yeah.
But as I said, you are headed to Puerto Rico with the team. And tell me a little bit about this trip that's planned. I know we mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, but I guess getting everyone ready for pleasant conditions.
Exactly.
I mean, something that you're not necessarily used to.
It's always a little, I don't want to say tough, but it's just different.
It's just different, isn't it?
Because, you know, they don't, this time of the year it's so hit and miss, you know. Typically you don't have the opportunity to be out doing what you normally do, playing off grass and doing the things. So you have to devise and find different ways that keep your skills what they need to be. So when you get out there on grass, I mean, it's not a shock. It's not really different than what it is that you're doing. So, but you get into a lot of nice days. I mean, like today, I heard the golf course was actually open today. The Talon course was open at Wilderness. And,
okay.
So, you know, every opportunity you get when that opportunity presents itself, you know, that gives you a chance to get out there and kind of do some normalcy, if there is such a thing this time of the year. So, and that's it's always just a little bit different because then all of a sudden we're going to be in Puerto Rico. It's going to be 80 degrees. You're hitting off grass where we've been hitting off mats. You know, it's the real
thing.
Tell
me about the course in Puerto Rico you guys are going to be playing.
So it's I haven't been there for a while, but it's beautiful. It's a resort course.
Okay.
You know, so it's out there in the ocean and it's
play
fun.
The breeze.
That's right. The wind usually blows.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
So, and again, you're going to start dealing with things that you have dealt with, but you haven't dealt with them for a while. You know, haven't been out playing in the wind and hitting off the Bermuda grass, which is different than what we play around here and what you've been practicing off of. So, but it doesn't take much. You know, we'll have a couple practice round days and to get a feel back to what we need.
Okay, so idiot question here, but how do you even get close to simulating that? Or is that just kind of throw it out there, work on your muscle memory, and then apply it to 80 and sunshine.
Yeah, pretty much. Because we've been there before, every one of them. You know, we played in those conditions. It's just we didn't do it yesterday.
Sure.
You know, so you draw back on your memory and your muscle memory, if there is such a thing, on this is what I do, and this is what I do in these conditions, you know. So it's kind of like riding a bike. Once you get back on it, it's like if you rode a bike at one time, you don't ever forget how to ride a bike. I just need to get on it a little bit and pedal.
I need to get the feel for it again. Dust it off.
So, and it doesn't take very long.
Yeah. Well, Tiger able to make the cut.
Yeah.
Tiger able to tie for 23rd. Tell me what you thought.
Pretty impressive. You know, probably exceeded my expectations on what I thought he would do. I didn't think he would make the cut. But in typical Tiger fashion, how'd he make the cut? He birdies the last hole the second day to make the cut right on the number, fist pumping. So it was like typical Tiger excitement doing what he does, which was a really good sign, you know, obviously that he did that. But he got better every day. So part of that is he was actually kind of getting his feet underneath him and getting comfortable with being back out there again. I mean, it's been a long time since that guy played 72 holes.
Yeah.
I mean, I read that somewhere, and it's like I couldn't believe the duration it was between when he completed his last 72-hole round to this one.
Was it close to 900 days?
Something like that.
Right. I mean, yeah, I saw that tweet.
Yeah, that's a long time.
That's crazy.
From that. So it was nice. And his short game was good. You know, it was kind of typical Tiger. Tiger, even when he's playing good, does he hit a lot of fairways? Not really.
No, because he only hit 17 the whole tournament.
Yeah. He only hit like 6 on the weekend. I mean, that's incredible. You know?
We can all relate to Tiger.
But short game was pretty good, you know? So his competitiveness was good. He got better every day. So it was exciting. So hopefully the future bodes well for him continue. And he stayed healthy. It didn't seem like he had any setbacks or anything like that. So it's like all those little things are confidence builders. Mm-hmm. For anybody, you know, even a guy that's the most confident in the world at what he does, I mean, he's building his confidence and his trust in the things that he needs to do and starts to show it's like, man, he drives it a little bit better and his short game is really good like it is. He starts to really believe that he can compete and win.
And that's one of the questions was, you know, how is his confidence going to be coming back? Can he stay healthy? Is he going to press it? We'll spend a few more minutes here on Tiger. Mike Shewhart with us in studio, the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. It is going to get nice at some point. It'll be real nice. Membership benefits and pricing for you to investigate. Go see Chris Thompson, Mike Shewhart, Director of Golf. And can log on today, as Shuey told you, the Talon course is open. I love that course. WildernessRidgeGolf.com, 402-434-5106. Back after this.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
10 minutes away, three-time Super Bowl champ, Ted Johnson, played for the Buffs and played for Parcells. Pete Carroll, Bill Belichick. And you got the two Bills coming up tomorrow night on ESPN, the 30 for 30. So we'll get caught up with Ted Johnson, his take on Brady, his take on the Patriots, and for sure what he thinks of Parcells and what he thinks of Belichick. He may even talk a little bit about Pistol Pete, but I think of Pete as Seattle and SC. Mike Shewhart's in Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, winding down. Shuey, a thought here on Tiger's comment. All I had with me, this is day 3, was my putter and my heart because it got rough for him. You've probably been there where things aren't working, but the putter is, thank the Lord.
Yeah, well, more times than you want. Most players are there more times than they want to be there, you know? So it's like you got a great mind and a great heart, will to do what you want, and you have a putter. And your putters are one of the probably the most important club in your bag, because it's what finishes every hole off.
Yes.
And if I'm really good with my putter and I can finish things off, I mean,
you'd save yourself.
Exactly right. So it's like that's one aspect of the game from all golfers that are out there. I mean, it's just it's an element of the game that you have to be really good at. you know, and it's kind of like you can never be really too good at it, because I don't know anybody that's ever one-putted every single hole that they've ever played. I know a couple guys that have come pretty close. So, and it's amazing what it does to us, but it's one of the more simplistic motions that you can work on.
It's all between the ears, isn't
it? But man, it's also one of the most mental frustrating ones, you know? So it's like, but it's so important, and it's something you can work a lot, and you need to work a lot on it, because it does such good things for us. If we let it, that's where the heart comes in the mind. So it's like, it becomes your best friend, not your worst enemy.
Yeah, and that's so well put, because you know how brutal I am at golf. But like worst enemy and putter, yeah, there's an equal sign between those two for me. But with you, man, and you know it because you lived it in the PGA, but it is so reassuring and also like great mental strength to know, okay, dude, I found the beach, maybe found the water. Wasn't good, and now it's going to be okay. Having that confidence.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Think about it, because it's like if I hit a poor tee shot and hit a poor iron shot, hit a poor chip shot, but I roll a putt in, so it's like bad, bad, bad,
it's good. A monster eraser.
And so all of a sudden I drive it perfect right down the middle long, hit it in there 4 feet, miss it.
Yeah.
You ended up with the same score.
But momentum-wise.
But two totally different ways to do it.
To move to the next hole.
So it's like, actually, one was really bad, but you turned a bad into a good. One was actually really good that you turned into a bad. So it's like, it's such a bizarre game if you don't look at it correctly, you know? So it's like, it, again, it's always trying to keep yourself on an upbeat and a positive, you know, no matter what happens. But we work so hard to hit it perfect, hit it perfect. We tell our juniors this all the time, you know? A two-foot putt is just as important as a 300-yard drive.
Yeah.
Probably even a little more so. You know, so it's like...
That 2 foot's going to stick between your ears. You miss it.
That's right.
You'll smile about the 300-yarder, but still be PO'd about the 2 footer you miss. Should we hang out if you want, brother?
For a little bit.
We'll head to Radio Row next. Ted Johnson, New England Patriots Super Bowl champ, kicks off Hour 2 with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back to it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. A standout linebacker at Colorado, a three-time Super Bowl champ with the New England Patriots. Linebacker Ted Johnson, co-host of the Triple Threat down with CBS Houston 610. Ted, great to speak with you, sir. How are you?
Chris, I'm doing good, buddy. It's a pleasure to talk to folks in Nebraska, man. This has been a while, so enjoy being with you.
Appreciate your time, and it's a special week. You've experienced it a number of times in your career. Super Bowl 52, you're up on the row in Minneapolis and getting ready for New England and Philadelphia round two. And I wanted to go back to when you first made your way to the NFL. Quick turnaround, year two, you're with Parcells, and New England gets to that Super Bowl. And what was that experience like, that first Super Bowl?
Yeah, it was incredible. Look, we were, you know, a lot of us, no, a lot of people didn't expect us in 1996 to get to the Super Bowl like we did. But it's funny, we had a game in the middle of that season, Chris, where we played the Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys had, you know, this was in 96. They still had Aikman and Truett, Emmitt Smith and Dale Johnston, Michael Irving, Nate Newton, Larry Allen, those guys. And we lost to those guys 12-6. But it was the proverbial... you know, moral loss, if you will. And it really helped us, believe it or not, give our confidence to go on to have a, I don't think we lost the game until we played in the Super Bowl against the Green Bay Packers. But it was great. Big memories for me, Chris, were my dad being out on the field, you know, a few hours before the game. You know, my dad has 4 kids and I have 3 other sisters, but none of them were athletes. And so for him to experience watching his son in the Super Bowl was something that, you know, no one ever expected. So that was a great, great memory for me. And And I was fortunate enough to get back to three more after that.
Well, yeah, you went 3-0 the next three trips you made. And coming from CU to New England, where Parcells was there, you had a unique experience with who you played for. We'll get to Belichick here in a little bit, but you also played for Coach Carroll. But your first pro coach was Parcells. What was Bill like?
I loved it. I loved it. You're right. It was. You're absolutely right, Chris. I mean, I had a unique pro experience when you consider three head coaches in 10 years I was in New England, and they're all going to be, at least one's in the Hall of Fame. Belichick's going to be in the Hall of Fame, and Pete Carroll to be determined, but he could end up in the Football Hall of Fame. And it was incredible. Bill Parcells was my favorite coach, okay, of the three. I resonated the best with him, Chris. The way he motivated me was with how I like to be motivated. He had an emotional investment in seeing me do well. You know, he took time with you. He carved out some FaceTime with you. If you were a Parcells guy, it meant a lot. It really did. And so he was able to get the most out of you and make me the best linebacker. Now, the other coaches, and Belichick in particular, you know, he made me understand the game better, and he motivated in a different way. But Bill Parcells just always connected with me somehow, knew what buttons to push, and being a Parcells guy, you know, when it was all said and done, makes me feel pretty good because I really respected the hell out of him. He was a tremendous coach.
Ted Johnson with his linebacker, three-time Super Bowl champ with the New England Patriots, former standout with Colorado, at Teddy J Radio on Twitter. You can follow Ted Johnson. You mentioned motivation and how important that is, and you make the jump to the NFL. It's professional, and you need to be self-motivated, but there's also buttons that need to be pushed. And give me an example, if you could, how Parcells would motivate and then how Belichick would motivate.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. You know, I think Parcells was the kind of guy where he would come up to you. If we're playing, you know, we're playing a team with a great running back, you know, for instance, say we're playing the Colts and they got Marshall Faulk. Well, you know, Parcells all week would come up to me, Chris, and he's just like, yeah, you know, you think you can handle this guy? I mean, do I got to send help your way when we got you in man-to-man coverage? You know, and he would just work me, just little comments all week, just trying to get in my head, trying to make me think about Marshall Faulk and the job I had to stop him in the running game and then stop him in the passing game. And he'd get you so lathered up that by the time, you know, the game came around on Sunday, I mean, you were ready to unleash hell. So that's what he would do. You know, there's games where I'd have a really good game, Chris, and then the next week in practice, if he saw me do a bad play, he'd yell across the field to my defensive coordinator and he'd say, "Hey, Al Groh, hey, Al. You know, Ted's already resting on his laurels. You know, Johnson doesn't think he has to come to practice after the game he had last week." So, you know, there was always a hint, if you were a Parcells guy, a hint of humor, but constantly pushing you, never stopping. And then Belichick would motivate more out of fear, more than anything, more out of just you were constantly singing for your supper. You never knew what your role was, when you were going to be used, when you were going to be called on, when your turn was going to come up. And he that's how he did it. He creates a culture there in New England where everybody is on their toes. You're kind of walking on eggshells. I mean, you see how he coaches, and it's a very similar coaching style to what I would say Greg Popovich does in San Antonio, okay, where, you know, Pop will yell. He'll yell at his stars. You know, I mean, he coaches his stars as hard as he coaches the last guy on the bench. That's kind of the formula for what works in New England. So nobody is protected from his wrath. And the way he motivates is pretty simple. Chris, he's the smartest guy I've ever been around as far as how he sees the game, big picture-wise. All right, so what he basically tells us is, defense, if you do these three things in this game, we'll win the game. Offense, you do these three things, you'll win the game. We go out there and do those things, we'd win the game. And all of a sudden, it's like we bought in early. You know, when in 2001, we bought into what he was doing because everything he said that would happen in the game, and we would pounce. And so that there's just this trust, and we know we're with the smartest coach on the field. And so we want to play hard for him because, you know what, nobody likes anything better than winning. And we just won a lot in New England And so you accept diminished roles. You accept less money to go there because you know you're going to be with a winner.
With Belichick, being the smartest guy in the room is, well, it's great. It has advantages. You know how to put a formula together to win. A lot of times, smart guys can't communicate. It sounds like Belichick's gift, aside from the brilliance, is the ability to communicate to get that buy-in. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's as simple as that. Here's the thing about the NFL, Chris. Really, I mean, look, we don't have to be best friends with our coaches. We don't. There's some things that we can maybe do as athletes that, you know, maybe compromise ourselves a little bit if we think we're going to win. I mean, it is the ultimate, and it really is. It's the most demanding sport there is, physically, mentally. The pressure, the constant pressure to perform, always. They're always trying to get younger and faster and cheaper. And so it creates this culture where you're just always on your toes. And when you have a coach who, and you know, we shouldn't overlook the fact that Tom Brady in 2001 started becoming our quarterback after Drew Bledsoe went down. So, you know, there's a parallel. It's both of those guys working together. But Belichick, he put game plans together week to week that, you know, teams would just crumble under. And you could see how he coached us, particularly in certain situations, you know, situational football. I mean, third down defense. I mean, we had a great third down defense. You look at the Patriots this year, they have a phenomenal red zone defense. They're one of the worst teams in yards given up per game. Mm-hmm. But yet, they're top five in points allowed because they clamp down the red zone. So he was just – we all bought in because of how smart he was and how – everything he said would be true if we did this, would end up being true.
Ted Johnson, a couple more minutes with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Three-time Super Bowl champ with the Patriots, former Colorado Buff, co-host the Triple Threat, CBS Houston 610. He's up in Minneapolis Radio Row at Teddy J Radios, where you follow Ted on Twitter. Ted, a thought here on that transition, that moment where Bledsoe's the number one pick overall. He's already taken you to a Super Bowl. He gets injured. Here comes Tom Brady. That mesh point in your life as a Patriot and how Bledsoe took it, how Brady's ran with it, and how the team responded. Do you remember that?
Yeah, like it was yesterday. It was, look, I was a Bledsoe guy. Drew and I were similar of age, and we were close friends. And when he got hurt, Mo Lewis hit him in week three on the sideline. And he was on the sidelines, I would say, or he was sidelined, I should say, for about 3 weeks. And I feel like the team, Chris, I think we were like 1-2 in that stretch. It wasn't great. But when Drew was cleared to play and Belichick stayed with Tom Brady, it was a shock to all of us because coaches didn't make decisions like that. Basically, and here's a guy, Bill Belichick, who came into New England without a lot of fanfare in 2000. Not a lot of people were excited about it because what happened in Cleveland. I think we won five games in 2000, and then we start the season out in 01, 0-2, and then Bledsoe gets hurt in week three, and it's not looking good at all. So Drew gets cleared to play. Tom's still out there doing, you know, he's playing pretty good, but the thing that jumped out at all of us was just, we couldn't believe how Belichick kept him in there. That was first off. But what you saw from Tom was this youthful energy, this intensity, and this exuberance that I had never really seen in a backup quarterback. What happens typically, Chris, whenever you have an accomplished player as a quarterback who gets hurt, i.e. Drew Bledsoe, the backup usually sees that as an opportunity to just keep the seat warm until the guy gets back. Tom didn't see it that way. He saw it as a chance to seize his job. And he grabbed hold of it, and he never looked back. He was, like, the happiest guy in practice. I mean, we're all pros. We're older guys. Like, that rah-rah stuff, that's for college, man. But, no, Tom, I mean, he was just an excitable guy who had passion. And his genius, Chris, is all the things you don't see. It's film work. It's the studying. It's the behind-the-scenes work that he puts in that makes him so great. And so you might not see that. It's not tangible. You can touch it. But whenever whenever he gets his guys lined up in a play call, that's going to beat the blitz that he just read. That's, and he knows where to go with the football before the snap. That's what gives him the greatest advantage is his mind. And so as long as they keep him healthy and keep him upright and protect for him, his mind is as sharp as it's ever been. And it's scary to think that this guy could be playing at this level for another 2 or 3 years, in my opinion.
Well, he's been kept relatively clean. He's had the knee injury back in 11, but you're right, man. The prep work is what separates good from great and can extend careers. Ted, a thought here with New England and what was swirling with the ESPN article a few weeks back. What do you believe happens after this season? Yeah, you have Brady, you have Kraft, you have Belichick. What's your thoughts on the direction of New England after the Super Bowl?
You know, I think there's something to that story. Do I think it's maybe all accurate? It's hard to tell. But there's got to be something there, Chris. Here's the thing. You don't have – this is unprecedented success we're watching right now.
Yeah.
There's nothing to relate this situation to. I mean, all three of these guys that have been together, Kraft, Belichick, and Brady, it's uncharted territory. So the egos and the power that they yield is enormous. I go back to see my kids in Boston all the time. They live outside of Boston. I'm back there all the time, and I am amazed at how much of that city is Patriots. When I got drafted in 95, it was Red Sox, and the Patriots were the fourth team on the rung as far as popularity. And I'm not kidding. Now it's not even close. They have so much power in that city. The Eagles are so ginormous. There's just things, they're changing. Like, Tom's not the same guy he was when I was playing with him. You know, he's not. He's now more of a businessman. You know, he does more, you know, kind of branding for himself than he ever did when I played. You know, the egos on Belichick comes across as this, like, you know, kind of boring, you know, aloof guy. He's a killer, man. He's got a massive, massive ego, and so does Kraft. So it's not surprising that there's going to be maybe some issues behind the scenes. And if this thing goes bad for the Patriots, if this thing goes bad, and I think it's a long shot, I think the Patriots win late like they always do in the Super Bowls. I think they, once again, baffle all of us with how they just – their precision and how they're able to execute in late in game. But if the Patriots lose this game, I mean, who knows? Maybe all of a sudden we see something different this offseason. You know, maybe Belichick not getting his way with Garoppolo somehow manifests in a way we didn't see coming. So I don't think that's going to be the case. But I think there is some truth to that, what went on there in New England a little bit behind the scenes. But it's only because it's just these three guys that have been together this whole time. It's hard to manage all the egos. And so I'm not surprised that maybe some of this stuff is going on.
Ted, 30 seconds here, and thank you so much for your time. What did it mean for you to be a part of Nebraska, Colorado?
I loved it. I had so much respect for the Nebraska program. I really did. I'm 0-3-1. I tied you guys back in 1991. If you remember, we blocked the field goal and ran it back.
Yeah, some of us think there might have been a few clips on that play, but go ahead.
Yeah, but that was in 1991, and it was the coldest game ever in Boulder. And I got to tie you guys. But other than that, 0-3. My best chance to get you guys was in 94 when we – Tommy Frazier was out, and you guys beat us. We were second in the country. You guys were number one, and then went on to win the national championship. But ton of respect. Love that rivalry back in the day, and got nothing but love for Lincoln, Nebraska.
Ted, you're awesome. We'll do this again. Enjoy Super Bowl week. Thanks for the time.
All right, Chris. Take care, buddy.
And we're back.
Fellas, I think we could listen to the radio.
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
It's hard for me to really picture that. I mean, they're such great, legendary coaches. I don't really see myself. I don't think of it that way. I just think of how great they were, what they meant to the game, what they accomplished, and how much respect I have for them.
That's Bill Belichick. That 30 for 30 coming up tomorrow night. The two Bills, Parcells, and Belichick. You just heard from Ted Johnson, played for both men, won championships with Belichick, played for one, and he was there with the birth of Tom Brady. Big thanks to Ted Johnson for his time. And you could hear the smile in his face when he thought and talked Nebraska Colorado football. Can tap the line, Chilling Bridge Court, can tap house, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Belichick's comments in reference to someone threw out to him, where are you amongst the all-time greats, and Lombardi and Halas and Shula. And Belichick's pretty modest that way, aside from the insanely large ego that he possesses, that kind of have to possess to be that great. So let's spend a couple minutes here on the NFL do a little bit here before we get into, you know, what you're doing as a Kansas City Chief fan today. Are you celebrating or are you irate? And there's some Chief fans out there that are in love with Alex Smith. There were some 49er fans out there that were in love with Alex Smith. And he's good, but was never great. Not just him. There's a lot of worse options out there at quarterback. Denver may be going the Kirk Cousins route if Von Miller has anything to say about it. But we'll get into the Alex Smith thought here in a minute here. But I want to bring on the Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke, because he is all things everywhere, especially in the world of sports gaming for entertainment purposes only. You know, you have this backdrop here. You have Brady, you have Belichick, you have Kraft, and you have immortality at hand. They've already won five. Can they get six? Can dude get six championships? And you've been watching the six-part Tom versus Time documentary. Again, I will get caught up on that tonight. I don't see much else on the tube, so that's where I will be. But what were you thinking going into it? And why did you watch it? Because you're Netflixed out. You're a big Brady guy. You're not a Brady guy. What got you into it other than it was there?
What originally got me into it is just the curiosity I had. I know, well, everyone knows how hard he works and just like...
But you hear that and to me, eye roll, right? And okay. then we talked to Ted Johnson and Ted's like, no, man, he's unreal.
Right. And it's like, you know he's the greatest quarterback of all time. There's no doubt about that now. And especially after that Jags win. And it came out like right after that, I believe, the first episode that I'm like, okay, I really got to see how this man is able to do this so well at 40 years old right now. And I respect Tom. We talked about it earlier. You're like, is there a little bit of the in-between where it's like you can respect Tom, you don't like the Patriots, or, you know, vice versa, whatever. I respect Tom. Don't really care about the Patriots as much. I like Belichick because he's amazing too. Not a fan, obviously, of the alleged cheating. You know, you can't respect that. But, no, I do. I like Tom a lot. So that drew my attention. And just watching that, it really just scares me to want to root for the Eagles this weekend as much as I do and will. I just, like, the things he says and the preparation he does is just unbelievable. And I don't know how you can beat that man, which he's proved it's very hard to do, unless you're Eli Manning. But
well, right. Yeah. It's prep and it's pass rush, right?
Right.
I mean, you got to have Eli and you got to have somebody get after the quarterback. And New York's been the only team to do it. And that's where Parcells and Belichick first got their start together. And that'll be interesting to see another highlight, another big time production that's out there leading up to this Super Bowl. And you wonder here if it's ever going to be an issue when it comes to nerves, the moment, the stage. Do you break down? Everyone's been talking about off-season and winter conditioning, and I get it because it is the off-season and it's winter conditioning and you've had a snafu with it. But, and Jay put it perfectly yesterday, You do it to prove that if this doesn't kill me, nothing will, to go all man card here on it. But that's what you're going to rely upon when it's tough and late in the fourth quarter, theoretically. It's what's going to keep you going. And here's Brady on nerves, and if he still gets him, because he's not really had bad performance. No one had a great first half if you're New England against Atlanta. But, man, did they compose themselves when it mattered in dire situations.
I'm pretty calm all the time. I have my moments, but for the most part, I'm pretty, I've been around for a long time. I kind of know the experiences, and, you know, I think focus, composure, poise is a really important part of the quarterback position.
It is. And to get composure, poise, being relaxed, it's about getting the work put in before you go into that kickoff, that showdown. There's your difference. There's your reason he's 5-2. Now, let's step back a second for Kansas City Chiefs fans. And is Alex Smith the reason you're out way too early in the postseason? I saw this stat last night. The worst the guy ever did since 2010 was 8-8 when he started. And fact check me on that, but I think I read that. The other part of it, too, what did Alex Smith do pretty well in comparison to Kirk Cousins or, say, a rookie in Mahomes, second-year guy that got a cup of coffee the final regular season game? Alex Smith took care of the football. He was very low when it came to interception numbers. Didn't crush it on touchdown numbers all the time, per se, but the man wasn't a double-digit interception thrower very often in his career. Cousins is. You have the same defense in Kansas City that you're going to have in Denver or you've had in Washington. It's just, if you're Washington, is this going to be the answer? Is this going to be the answer to go get a guy that's older? And he's been at two stops and gotten you to the postseason. I don't know. And I think Alex Smith's a good quarterback. He's been playing for a long time. He's unique. Very mobile. He's athletic. Kind of a zone read ability type player. But what's he going to do in your division? Is Dallas going to be down next year? Is Philly going to be down next year? Philly might be down because of their first-place schedule. But they get Carson Wentz back, and they're in the Super Bowl already. Who else am I missing? The Giants. No idea. Don't really care. That said, there you go. And I guess, are you willing to pay $91 million, $73 guaranteed? Guaranteed. To a guy in his mid-30s. As the answer to get you to where you want to go if you're Washington. Now, you'd have to pay Cousins. My answer is pay neither. If you don't think Cousins is the guy, go somewhere else, find someone else. It isn't Alex Smith. He's just not going to put you over the hump because history says he hasn't been able to. Close. Got you the NFC Championship with the Niners. And then Harbaugh went with Cap. That says a lot, doesn't it? The guy gets you to the doorstep of the Super Bowl and you bench him. There's just something there, excitement level. I don't know what you do. And maybe Mahomes is going to be awesome. Don't think so. Could be wrong on that. Now let's go to the Kirk Cousins card. How far away are you in Miami? Being the lapsed Dolphins fan, a ways. But if you're Denver, does Cousins put you over the top with the wideout you still have and that defense you still have? The other thing, too, with Denver is I think the clock is ticking on your defense. You've got some studs, but I think you've got some guys that are aging slash here comes free agency. You've won with a absolutely duct-taped Peyton Manning because of the defense and the run game. You could do it again. You just got to figure out if you're John Elway, what you want to do. Do you want to go short-term or long-term here? Because what you've drafted hasn't worked. What you have is maybe a couple years left. And the other part of this, too, is there's no more Wade as defensive coordinator. He's kicking butt, taking names in L.A. There's your next Super Bowl team, the Rams. We'll have a jock doc coming up. Good stuff on the Patriots. What episode is just came out here on this Brady documentary?
I think it's the third or fourth.
And they're about 45 minutes each.
No, they're way less than that.
Oh.
Yeah, I think they're maybe like 15 to 20 minutes long.
Okay.
At least like the first two were. That's the only, those are the only two I've seen. So.
Okay. Yeah, it's, there was like a 15-second snippet of his partner. I forget the guy's name. The guy that's not allowed on the sideline anymore. Mm-hmm. Doing the old rub down.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. They're bros.
Mm-hmm.
Sauter Heyman is there for you with Valentine's Day. It will be February tomorrow. We're a week away from signing day. We'll have a recruiting update coming up. But listen, we're a little further out on Valentine's Day. There's signing day and then there's Valentine's Day. And one way to get that signature you want from her. How about a time and eternity pendant diamond? From Rick and your friends at Sauter Heyman. Time and eternity starting at $99 exclusively with Sauter Heyman, 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion Lincoln, Rod West in Grand Island. Now she'll forever know how much you care when you give her the gift of time and eternity. A diamond pendant starting at $99. Rick can help you find the most beautiful one for her with Sauter Heyman. SauterHeyman.com.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Doug Tavis with us. Dr. Doug, how are you?
Doing pretty good, Chris. Been nice to have a little bit of warm weather here this last week.
It you know what? It shines upon us from time to time, and that's all you can hope for as you push towards February and March, and those are big basketball months, and right now you're kind of in the winter grind, and one of the guys I've always enjoyed watching, Mike Conley, do his thing with Memphis. He is undergoing season-ending surgery. He has heel issues. It's his left heel. Dr. Doug, we talk a lot about knees and ankles and elbows and shoulders, but man, there's such an important part when it comes to athletes and their feet, specifically the heel. And let's spend a little bit of time today on Mike Conley.
You bet. Yeah, so Conley's been out, since November this year.
Yeah.
And hasn't been playing. He injured his Achilles area back in November. And the reports have been that he's going to come back, he's going to come back, he's going to come back. Now they're saying no, season-ending surgery coming up. So what's probably gone on here for him is that, like a lot of people, there is a part of the heel bone, we call that the calcaneus, so the calcaneal bone that actually can push on the Achilles tendon from the inside of the tendon. Okay, so it's not like the shoe rubbing on the tendon from the outside, but actually from the other direction, from inside. And that bump has a name to it. That bump of bone is called a Hagelin's deformity. Don't ask me why. I don't know. But that's the name of it. And when you have that bump of bone and it rubs against the Achilles, it can cause a tendonitis, essentially, or inflammation of the Achilles tendon to a point where it's really difficult to do much of anything in terms of running or jumping.
So you have that, and you've put up with it, and it looks like things have been exhausted by Mike Conley throughout his career to deal with this. What are some of the things that you can do to try and just keep it at bay and still play versus having surgery?
Yeah, and that's really exactly what they've been doing. And Basically, the idea here is get the inflammation out of the tendon, so he'd be taking the anti-inflammatory medications, immobilize the tendon for several weeks initially after the injury so that the inflammation can calm down. And then you've kind of got to go through the process of stretching the tendon out, getting that tendon tissue nice and compliant so that as it rubs up against that bump, it is elastic enough or loose enough, if you want to say it that way, that the bump really doesn't bother it. But there comes a point where the injury and the inflammation in that tendon area just won't calm down, and you end up having to go in and remove the bump in order to take away the pressure on the tendon, and then that is what tends to calm it down. So with most athletes, you're going to do everything you possibly can to avoid that surgery, but we're going on 4 months for this guy, or 3 months for this guy, and he's just not getting better.
3 years Mike Conley's been dealing with it, and it'll be shaved down, and quoted as didn't want to do it, but I've exhausted every option, and it needs to happen before he is content, and that's the direction they're going. A Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, Dr. Doug Tavis with us, Mike Conley, our topic today. So with this procedure, Dr. Doug, how intricate, how delicate is it from your guys' aspect to go in and do the work?
Well, this is generally done as an open operation, and so we make an incision along the Achilles tendon, go in and find that bump, and then it's not a real delicate operation. This one is one where we literally just need to remove enough of that bone, and there's a variety of ways you can do that, but remove enough of that bone to where as he dorsiflexes or brings his foot up and his ankle up into a flexed up position, that he doesn't bump that against that Achilles tendon. There's a lot of bleeding any time, though, that you take and remove any bone. You take off the cortex of the bone or that outer layer of the bone, and then there's quite a bit of bleeding from that inner bone, that medullary bone. And so a big part of the problem with this one is that wherever there's bleeding, there's a lot of scar tissue that happens. There's a lot of swelling that happens. And so it's just a difficult thing sometimes to come back from this operation very quickly. That's why they're, looking at, even though the NBA season is going to stretch out for a long time and, the Grizzlies may make it, quite a ways into it, he's still not going to be able to come back at this point. I would expect to see him back next year without too much difficulties, but not this year.
When he does get back to it, what are some of the steps forward he can take to get back to his all-star form? And the length of that process, what are some potential setbacks with that process?
Yeah, well, actually, on this one, it's pretty good news, I think, because the Achilles tendon itself generally is in good condition once you're able to remove the bump. And so it's not like, when Kobe Bryant was trying to come back from an Achilles tear. That's a situation that there's all sorts of possible ramifications from that. But in this situation, the Achilles tendon itself is not typically operated on, and so you're able to just move it out of the way and do the surgery on the bone. So I don't anticipate a problem like an Achilles rupture in a situation like this. I think he's got to really get the compliance of that tendon down, and once he's able to do that, I think there's little likelihood of recurrence.
When it comes to pain and the twinge he felt and the irritation against that tendon with this bump, this bone, what's it been described to you like by athletes if they have something like this? Because he's put up with it for a long time, and he's battled through it, but it's been, it's taken away from some of his greatness as well.
Yeah, it's a deep aching pain that just it's like a toothache that just doesn't go away. You know, so every time that you know, you think you're getting better, you go out and exert yourself, do some running or jumping, and you bang those structures together, the bone and the tendon, and then boom, the pain comes right back. It can be a real sharp pain if there's a situation where some of the Achilles tendon, some of the fibers of the Achilles tendon, fray a little bit or tear a little bit. But it's not like an Achilles tear where it ruptures completely. So it's really kind of a nagging pain. That's why he's been able to put up with it for a while playing. But then after getting it really flared up in November, he just hadn't been able to come back from it.
Mike Conley, our topic of Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, Dr. Doug Tavis. Dr. Doug, we'll get caught up again. Thanks for a few minutes today.
You bet, Chris. Have a great day.
Well, Gronk on our minds. We'll hear from the tight end from New England shortly. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Hopefully by tomorrow. I mean, we'll see how it goes and what the doctors say. I mean, I'm not the guy to say, oh, I'm out of the protocol. That's the doctor's calls. And hopefully that it's very, very soon.
Gronk right there. Time will tell with him. Any line swaying, Mr. Danny?
No, I think it's still at 5.5 right now.
Do you give New England another 1.5 or a half a point with Gronk? Or do you drop him if he's out? He'll play.
Yeah, he's going to play. So I think they have it set where it's still going to be regardless if he's playing or not.
They're saying, okay, he's going to play. We're making it 5.5. How would you feel if you're Blake Griffin and you've been traded to Motor City, but you found out over Twitter? I've never been able to get out of... It's not like I'm digging here, but, you know, Blake was a free agent, and I know he does car commercials and, you know, jumps over hoods, Bo and Luke Duke style to dunk and all that garbage. And I know there was a fight or an attempted fight or some words not long ago when Houston played the Clips. I look at Blake, and nobody is in line to get him. He's a guy that's 20-12 every night, and he's high flying. But man, there's not a bunch of dudes that want to either go play with him. Now he got traded. Doc had to green light this thing. Has he ever moved the needle for you?
Yeah, no, I like him as a player, but you got to think it's because of his injuries is why people are staying away from him. It's got to be a little bit of that for
sure. I don't know if it's the injuries or what, but if you're a team, like he could have gone home, right, and gone to Oklahoma City.
Yeah, he almost did. They almost traded him for Paul George is what they were saying.
But that's night and day. Like, can Blake take over a game, and will his team to victory? Or is he just going to give you the 23-12 every night with maybe a win or a loss? Right. Is he that big a juggernaut / offensive dominant type player?
He's dominant, but he's not the guy you want with the ball in his hands with the clock winding
down
at
clutch.
The end of the game. Right.
I don't like to go there and say clutch, yes, no, because it's beaten up by Skip Bayless every other day. So we are loaded up tomorrow. Was not an intentional lie about Karell Buchalter today, but C. Buck will join us tomorrow. Ralph Brown will join us tomorrow. And then Hall of Fame basketball coach Tom Penders will join us tomorrow on Hail Varsity Radio. Pretty excited about that. Good stuff today from Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Brandon Vogel had a lot of fun talking Scott Frost and quarterbacks. So if you missed the show, you can log on hailvarsity.com or go to iTunes. We are working on getting the password to get the podcast up on ESPN1480.com. And Ted Johnson, three-time Super Bowl champ, drafted and played for Parcells, was there when Brady was born, and won the last one against Philly as he went 3 out of 4 when it comes to world championships. Thanks to Danny Burke, Pride of Chicago, Chris Schmidt. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 4 with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.